Does this get you a little bit pumped? Just a little bit. Hi, everybody.
Girls on Film? Doesn't it sound like Duran Duran Girls on Film?
Yeah, it does have a similar...
What is it,
Kev? Not, but it does have that kind of beat.
This is The Rapture.
Is that the song or the band?
Kevin?
That would be the band.
The band Rapture. The Rapture.
It sounds very Duran Duran to me. Or Drawn.
Yeah, it does. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. It's Wednesday, right in the middle of the week, right smack dab in the middle of your week. Welcome to the show. We're at 312-981-7200. Can I say, everybody was so up in arms over this sweetened beverage tax. Everybody was panicking about the sweetened beverage tax. And I had a Dr. Pepper for breakfast, and it was $619. And I don't think that's out of line. Do you?
Can I tell you, I stopped to get gas this morning, and I went in. I was going to get a Diet Coke. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest with you, the extra, whatever, 16 cents is not going to break me if I'm buying one
item.
It's
not going to break you on a one-time purchase, but over time, it will add up.
But I still got a water instead.
So it's working. Their plan is working.
It did work. One day.
Sometimes they sell stuff like this as it's for your own good. That we're doing this to help you. We're going to make your life
healthier. We can
police
our own selves.
I agree with that. I think this is outrageous. And Steve Burchan and I had a conversation earlier before the show, and he taxed me for that, which never used to happen. But
he's
starting
a taxing
today,
man.
You have to pay a Burchan tax, so I'm okay with that. I asked this question the other day when Eric Zorn was in, and I got a quick answer. I don't think Eric was trying to avoid the answer, but we were talking about other things. But on the news the other day, when they were talking about the sweetened beverage tax, they said that Tony Preckwinkle strong-armed the judge into making this decision.
I heard you bring this up to him.
And that's really disturbing because they didn't really go into detail over how she would have strong-armed the judge. But to my knowledge, you're not allowed to do that.
Not in open court.
Sometime in chambers. Right.
No, I think, you know, we were talking about this. Commissioner Boykin, who voted against the tax, that was what he was saying. Those were his words.
That she strong-armed the judge.
So I don't know if you heard someone referring to what he said. And I don't know exactly. I heard those words too, and I don't know exactly what he meant, unless he meant that she was building public pressure by sending out these layoff notices and things like that.
Yeah, that's what I think, because it sure sounds bad that, 300 people had to be laid off if this tax wasn't passed.
Yeah, but I don't think, a judge who's worth his or her salt would fall for that. I mean, I think they would say they would rule on the merits of the case.
That they would take that into consideration because you don't want to see that many people lose their jobs, but you.
No, they wouldn't take it into consideration at all. You know, I mean, that's not part of what's before them. What's before them is how the tax is written and how it's going to be implemented and whether how badly the county needs the money or doesn't need the money. You know, that's not something that's before the judge.
And I also asked Eric if these people then would not be laid off because some of them got notices saying they will be in August or something.
Right.
It's not like it was immediate. So, Steve, do you know anything about that? Will these layoffs then not happen?
I'm sure that they'll be fine. Yeah. I shouldn't say that I'm sure, but typically when you are warning of dire consequences, unless something happens, you know, once it happens, then the dire consequences go away.
How about this balance, though? I know that there's the argument that certain officials could lose their jobs or would lose their jobs. But what if you're a small business owner? What if you have a 7-Eleven type store and you count on a certain amount of income coming from people running it?
You appeal like these people are doing
right
now.
You would have to, wouldn't you?
And what's the Retailers Association?
The Retail Merchants Association is going to appeal.
I wonder how that's going to go.
Well, look, let's see. I mean, I bought my diet soda today. It cost me an extra 20 cents. It's too expensive. I should drink fewer of them. But I don't think people are going to stop consuming beverages from
No,
it.
Look at cigarettes. They went up to $300 a pack, and people still buy them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you want to do... That's why this isn't really for health reasons, and I think that's exactly what Kevin wanted to point out.
To their credit, they're not disguising it or trying to disguise it as much as in the past. They've kind of said point blank, this is for tax purposes.
We need the cash.
We need the cash, right.
So, Kevin, your thoughts?
Well, Bill, what you said is true, but when this all first came up, it was all about the health of, you know, the citizens of Cook County. It
wasn't
about making money. You
know. Right. Initially,
I'm shocked to hear that this is actually revenue-driven. You know, that never happens with the Cook County.
Thanks, Kev. Get your soda. Well, you can't get it anymore. You should have gotten it yesterday.
I'm out in DuPage County, so I'll stop.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
Thank you. And I'm telling you, I have a graduation party coming up. I'm going to go do that because I have to buy tons and tons of soda.
Yeah, then it would be worth your while. I would love to see, and I'm sure somebody will do this in their news today or tonight, how much of an influx there was in purchases of beverages like this yesterday, because everybody realized one day later they'll end up having to pay a lot more for it.
It's not that much more when I think about it.
It's not per unit much more at all, but if you look over the course of a month or a year,
I guess,
you go, wow, this cost me a lot of money.
How many ounces are in a can of Diet Coke?
12. Eight? Not always. A standard can is 12 ounces. So that's an extra 12 cents.
Times 12, 144. So $1.44 extra for a 12-pack.
Yeah.
Well, that does add up.
It adds up quick, doesn't it?
That really does.
Yeah. And they're not saying specifically, I mean, I know they're saying we're going to save some jobs with this, but beyond that, they're not saying specifically. Like, usually they'll say, well, this extra money will go to for this reason and this extra money. But this time they're being very vague on exactly where it'll go.
To pay off the red light tickets that they're refunding,
right,
maybe.
Maybe. That could be part of it.
I wonder if this is going to stick. I know it had hassles before and it went into effect today.
Yeah.
But now with the RMA, the Retailers Merchants Association, appealing this, mm-hmm. I don't see them taking it back.
I'd be surprised if they did. I really would.
Well, it did work. Look at what I'm holding.
You have a glass of Dasani, a bottle of Dasani. That's better for you.
And my beef with it is that it's very hard to figure out what's taxed and what's not. And
Eric Zorn said this.
And I think that's what the merchants were suing over. They're saying, look, we got to figure out what we're going to pay taxes on here and which we're not. You know, they've got to sort it out when they check someone out, not just how much to charge you for your drink, but how to record that, make sure it applies, and send it off to the county.
Well, there's also the element of, let's say you go to a fast food place, a Burger King, a Wendy's, a McDonald's, a Subway. All right, so if they're pre-making the drink, there's going to be ice is going to be a third or 40% of your drink. So you're essentially being taxed on ice. You know,
yeah, but it's the size of the cup. That's the only way they can do it.
It's a 16-ounce cup. You're not getting 16 ounces of beverage more times than not, unless you say, I don't want any ice. A lot of that's going to be ice.
And what about the free refills at a lot of these places? They just hand you a cup.
Right.
Subway, for instance, I was just there. They give you a cup. You can go back up and refill. Do I have to go pay? Here, I put 4 ounces in here.
Right.
Are there going to be marks on the cup where I have to go back and give them 4 cents?
What about dishonest people who say, I'm just going to have water and then fill it up with Mountain Dew? How are they going to be affected by this?
Can I tell you, I have never done that in my life. I feel like there's some kind of camera on the soda machine that's going to, the bells and whistles are going to go off if I do it.
As St. Peter is interviewing you right before you enter heaven, he'll go, look at this video. How disturbing is this with the extra pop? What are you doing? All right, what are your thoughts on this? Calls are lining up at 312-981-7200. We'll take those calls and texts next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. I'm going to put a nasty word tax on you. You got to pay a nasty word tax.
I would be broke if they did that.
No.
You would make a ton of money.
I know.
It's like my personal swear jar with you. you could retire.
In a minute. It wouldn't take me as long as Scaramucci to retire.
It'd be your 401 Wendy.
Why do we keep using me? Payback's a Wendy. Why is it always me?
It's just easier.
I don't like it.
Take some time to think about it.
Yeah.
All right. Soda tax or sweetened beverage tax, although that's not even true because even if it's not sugar, went into effect today. Stopped to get gas this morning, went in to get an ice cold bevy, was going to get a Diet Coke, and at the last minute, I'm like, I'm going water. So
I'm proud of you for doing that. That's a good move for you. You think you'll do it again tomorrow or one time?
I'm trying to cut back on soda on the whole, so I'd like to just have it with meals. Mm-hmm. There's really no reason for me to drink it any other time. I have my coffee, and then I'm going to try and drink water.
That's easy.
I'll try. Hey, Karen?
Yes.
How are you going to deal with this new tax?
Well, I don't live in Cook County. I live in Lake County. But I'm tired of the politicians. Their solution to everything is to tax the residents.
Right.
And this is strictly on the principle. If these people want to take a nice ride on the weekend, get in your car, drive up to Kenosha, where there is basically little or no tax on groceries at all.
And then you can stop at the Brat Stop, which would really make me a happy camper. You could, on your way to Ishnala, Bill, you can go get soda.
Stop off and get some soda. I'll tell you what, Karen, almost every year when we go to Maine, one of the days we spend in New Hampshire, because I've got relatives in New Hampshire. My in-laws live in New Hampshire. So in New Hampshire, there's no sales tax. You just go and you buy stuff and there's no sales tax. And they're doing fine. They're not hurting for anything in New Hampshire.
Because they have rich people and living there.
Not everybody. There are some rich people in New Hampshire, but not everybody's rich. But you go to the grocery store and you see your total. I'm sure you've done this where you look at the receipt and you go, boy, without the look at the price without the tax. Well, in New Hampshire, that's what you pay. You walk out of there paying without any tax. It's fantastic.
So you look up at a menu board and you pay what it says on that menu board?
Yeah.
Okay, that's foreign to me.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the roads are in perfect condition and the bridges are nice. Everything's fine. So how do they swing it? How come we can't do that?
How come we don't live there?
I don't know. It's a long drive in every morning.
I guess. Well, Karen, that's what you're going to do and that's what you recommend. Go to Wisconsin, huh?
I occasionally go to Wisconsin. I live in Lake County. The taxes aren't as high. I don't know how people in Cook County can stand it. I mean, you cross the line from Lake County to Cook County and it's like 10 cents difference.
Probably more.
Yeah, more. Yeah.
Thank you, Karen.
Yeah, or 10% difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a huge difference.
Okay, I think if the citizens did that, then the politicians would have to rethink some of their solutions.
That'd be nice.
And then what's wrong with me? I guess Catholic guilt, but then I feel sorry for all the retailers who it's not their fault.
No,
that
I feel
this
terrible
happened.
For the retailers. It's not their fault.
But then there would be pressure on the politicians to come up with a different solution.
Right.
We got to do away with politicians and get a businessman to run everything.
Wouldn't that be great?
Thank you, Karen. Thanks, appreciate Karen. Your call. the preemptive strike. Lori, you're a genius. What'd you do?
What? I told you what I would do. I'm going to go out of Cook County to buy my soda. And I think they have a lot of nerve. And if Breckwinkle needs some money, she should get out of there. That is one big salary. We can do something else with it, and she should take Medicaid.
Take away a week's salary.
People, she can take with her.
I like it.
So, did you stock up, or you're going to?
I stocked up. Next half a year, I have enough.
Wow.
And then I go to Will County, to Page County, wherever it's cheaper, I will go there.
If Preckwinkle needs money, she should do what the rest of us do. Look under her couch cushions.
That's right.
All right.
Well, Lori, you are very smart for stocking up. You're set till just before the holidays, right? Or will this get you through the holidays?
That's right. Because she's not worried about us drinking healthy and eating healthy food. She just wants the money. She wants us to buy more soda so she makes more money.
What's your favorite soda?
I drink 7-Up and Squirt.
Squirt's the best.
A little cola.
I would have lost. If I was betting on your favorite, I would not have put money on Squirt for some reason.
I would have guessed root beer
reason. Yeah, root beer maybe, yeah. Sprecher root beer maybe.
Yep. Oh, root beer. No, I don't like root beer.
No? All right. Well, thank you, Lori. Appreciate your opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We should have asked her to sing Edelweiss. Wouldn't that have been a nice way to close off the segment?
I loved her.
She's great.
I wanted to keep talking to her. Let's talk to John. Hi, John.
These people saying they're going to go up to Wisconsin to save the soda tax. They're going to spend $10 in gas to save a few cents on soda?
You can go someplace closer than Wisconsin. I mean, if you're going to Wisconsin, why not?
Right. And, John, I got to be honest with you. I'm not that far. I'm in Cook County, but I'm pretty close to DuPage. And I thought about it.
10 minutes away?
I'm less than 10 minutes.
Yeah, you could do that.
But for people in the city.
If they don't have a soda tax, then they're going to have to raise the property tax, which is the worst tax of all. It's the most unfair tax.
Especially in the suburbs.
Yeah, I know. They just drive by your house and make a decision based on that.
Look at it this way. This one is more in your control than almost any other
tax. It is.
That's true.
No, it is.
You don't have to drink any of these things.
But it's Squirt is so good.
Squirt is good. You can't argue. Yeah.
All right. Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Hey, I want to mention my condolences to someone we lost in the radio business. Joe Collins was a fantastic and traffic reporter. He was a wonderfully nice guy, and he did traffic in the afternoons on WBBM for many years.
Yeah.
And he developed muscular dystrophy. He was diagnosed with that, and it was very debilitating for him. He couldn't get through his traffic reports. He was kind of put on part-time and then ultimately had to retire because of it. He fought quite a battle, and he never complained once. He was a friend. He was a coworker. He was a really sweet guy. And Joe Collins, we will miss you. So our condolences to his family. He passed away. I got wind of it last night.
Yeah, very sad news.
So very, very sad.
All right, we will take a little bit of a break. We have news coming up and then a lot more show, so stay here. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us, the best way to do it is either call or text us at 312-981-7200. A couple of days ago, you and I, and this was a story that was hot off the presses, Wendy, we just learned that Steve Bartman, the Chicago Cubs fan, who was in the wrongest place at the wrongest time in the history of Wrigley Field when a foul ball was hit against the Florida Marlins in the playoffs, and he reached up, as did every other fan anywhere near him, to try to catch the foul ball, and he didn't, and Moises Alou got upset, and everybody in Chicago got upset. The Cubs then went on to lose to the Marlins, and his name became infamous with the Bartman ball.
That unfairly.
So the Cubs did what I said, and I think you agreed, was a pretty classy move, and they gave a World Series ring to Steve Bartman on Monday, along with a beautiful note saying, "We feel for you. We know what your life has been like for the past decade and a half. We're sorry. We know that this won't fully make up for it, but this is a gesture of our appreciation for you being a Cubs fan." And at the time, I did say I thought that was the perfect way to handle the situation for the Cubs.
They get a big W for that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That really was just, listen, can I just ask a question? If Moises Alou didn't get so irritated, would this have still been such a big deal? Didn't that tip it in even more?
It made it worse. There was already the perception that the fans got in the way. And I listened again yesterday to the call. I was at that game, but I had heard the call before of the guys doing the game on TV, and they said, this is borderline fan interference. Some of those fans just really got in his way. And you could make that argument. It's really tough to decide what would have happened.
That's not the only thing that kept them out of the World
by
Series
far, not by far,
that year, really.
Not by far.
But
right.
I think it was a nice gesture. In a way, it's like, I don't know, the Cubs are bringing it up again, because I was shocked it was 14 years ago.
The Cubs are bringing it up again because they...
To end it.
They finally, of course, I don't know if anyone saw this, but they won the World Series last year. So
yeah, there's
some
nothing,
people DVR'd it. I don't want to ruin it.
There's nothing they could have given them before, like, here's a Cubs pennant, we're sorry. And I'm sure they did reach out and give them some stuff.
But this was the ultimate gift.
Yep.
A World Series ring with his name on it, it's stunning, you know? And no, it doesn't make up for the past 14 years where he's had to kind of skulk in the shadows. And if he did attend a game or anything in Chicago, he had to either, you know, change his look or do something so people wouldn't recognize him. What a horrible way to live your life just because you were in the wrong place at the wrong time.
His attorney issued a statement a while back, maybe about a year ago, about something about if... they do, like, was it Bartman might be throwing out a pitch at the World Series game or something?
There was people who suggested it.
Right.
It didn't happen.
But his lawyer spoke out on his behalf, I remember. And I thought, I recall his lawyer saying he had to move away. Am I imagining
this?
I know
he did move away. I don't know if he still lives elsewhere, but I know he did live somewhere else for a while.
How badly does that suck that this forced him to move
right.
away? I mean,
I know.
So I think the Cubs organization did a very good thing handing him the ring.
I do too, but Linda Cohen, who is a sports reporter over at ESPN, does not.
Who?
Linda Cohen is her name, and she's good. I've seen her before. I like Linda Cohen. She calls the move ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Is she borrowing a word from Kaplan?
She stole David Kaplan's word. Sports anchor Linda Cohen on Tuesday blasted the Cubs' ridiculous move to award a 2016 World Series ring to one Steve Bartman. That's my address, by the way. That's where I live, one Steve Bartman. The self-serving gesture does not make up for what Bartman has endured as the evil fan who allegedly cost Moises Alou and the Hard Luck Cubbies a series-clinching win during Game 6 of the 2003 NLCS. All this according, again, to Linda Cohen over at ESPN. She said it was a smarmy PR move designed to, and this is a word I'm not that familiar with, assuage the franchise's guilt over making Bartman a scapegoat. For spellologists in the audience, that's A-S-S, I will pause for comedic effect, U-A-G-E, designed to assuage the franchise's guilt over making Bartman a scapegoat for the club's century of failure before finally winning it all last season. Bartman, who avoided the limelight after the incident, was just one of many fans reaching up for that foul ball, Cohen noted. And we said that the other day. Everybody in the area had their arms up trying to catch the ball. He was just kind of front and center and had kind of a specific look to him. And because of that, everybody remembers him.
Assuage.
Assuage?
Mm-hmm.
What did I
assuage.
Say? Assuage. Sausage?
Assuage.
I think I said sausage.
Assuage. To make an unpleasant feeling less intense or to satisfy an appetite or desire.
Right. Well, assuage.
This clearly was assuage. The case of assuage.
I've seen it written. I didn't know how to say it, so I went to dictionary.com.
But she's right. I don't know what it is. I know that Usinger's makes them in Wisconsin. Again, I'm thinking of sausage. I apologize. The ring is a peace offering that does not erase 14 years of the hell that this guy has endured.
It's not the Cubs' fault.
It's not the it's not the Cubs' fault at all. I'm trying to think of whose fault it is. It's somebody's fault. Who do we blame for this?
I blame the press. No, I blame the real media because you said it yourself. We were talking about this on the Stream of Consciousness, which you can catch us from noon to one every day. You said yourself that you were at the game after it happened. Someone called you and said, I know the guy who did it.
Right.
Please, you were on another radio station at the time. Don't mention his name. And you weren't going to.
Right.
By the time you woke up, his name had exploded everywhere.
Right. Right.
So I'm kind of blaming the media.
So if the media hadn't ever named this guy,
why didn't they name all five of the people that were reaching out?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that.
So, yeah, I hate to sound Trumpian.
Yeah.
But I do blame the media for this. Had his name not gotten out,
I just wonder if in a day and age where you can look anything up on the internet, and now keep in mind, we're 14 years removed from this. This is 14
it's
years
even
ago.
Worse
when
now.
It wasn't that easy to do what we can now do. So at some point, his name. You know how there'll be a court case and they'll just say person X or some version of that.
John Doe.
X, John Doe. And the media will kind of decide it might be in everybody's best interest that we not give this person's name out. But if you do a little digging on the internet, you can find it out in 2 minutes.
And I mean, that's the media's job to do that digging and find out who that person is. But when that name was broadcast and in print, that's when everyone knew Steve Bartman's name. And you asked who's responsible. It's not the Cubs.
Of course, it's not the Cubs. It's not the Cubs.
It's us, Bill.
The Cubs did everything they could possibly do to protect him after this happened. They quickly whisked him away and they put him in the bowels of Wrigley Field and they made him go through some side exit so that nobody would see him. And it just sadly played out this way. However, I disagree with Ms. Cohn because I don't think what the Cubs did, she called this a BS ridiculous move, a PR stunt. I don't think it. What do they have
the
to gain?
The Cubs need PR.
They don't.
Now, I mean, they're the world champions.
Right.
They don't need to. They've got the PR.
So when this first happened on Monday afternoon, I thought to myself, I can't think of a nicer goodwill gesture than them saying, we realize that just by virtue of this guy liking our baseball team, he's had a miserable 14 years. We can't repair that, but what we can do is give him something that means something to him, this World Series ring. That's all we can do right now. And if you follow what happened at this sit-down meeting with Cubs brass and Steve Bartman the other day, they said to him, you're welcome here anytime you want. We'll make your day good. Just come to Wrigley Field. Enjoy the Cubs. This is your team. We want you to be happy here. So who knows what will happen beyond that? Everybody's always said he should come out and throw out a first pitch, or, you know, and that'd be nice. I think the fans would love to see him.
I got the best idea.
Huh.
The best idea, and if anyone from Cub Central is listening, let him sit in the dugout. Because
not in
he'd
the same
be
seat.
No.
You don't want him sitting down the left field line. That's bad juju.
You want him to sit in the dugout whenever he wants to watch the game from there, because then he will be protected.
I think there are rules about that.
A civilian isn't allowed.
Let him be a bad boy.
So if he throws out the first pitch, is he cheered or booed?
I say cheered. You think he'd be booed? Really?
Nobody's forgiven this guy. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Really?
I think everyone's forgiven him. I think everyone's forgiven him, but the mob has a very bad behavior history. So
right.
Steve, Wendy and I talked about this the other day. You could almost equate Bill Buckner's situation in Boston with this. And a couple of years ago when the Red Sox invited Bill Buckner to come out on the field and say a few words, they went nuts for him.
He was
the
a
crowd
player,
loved
though.
Him.
This guy was not a player.
But wouldn't that make him more endearing to the fan that he was one of us? He wasn't a player. He was just a guy who had a fairly decent seat to a playoff game and was a victim of circumstance.
It makes me sick to this day. I never thought he should have gotten the treatment he got. Many people didn't, but there still are people today who are Cubs fans that still
hold a little grudge.
Yeah.
No, there aren't.
Yes,
who are they?
There are people that will bring it up. It's like, he totally ruined that game.
I think everyone brings it up, but no one believes that. Wendy,
I don't know.
I'm not challenging you, but
then why did he have to be escorted out?
Because at the time it was such a heated moment at the time. But I think 14 years removed, and the fact, if you throw into the equation the fact that the Cubs have finally broken their World Series drought, they won, I think now all people will remember is that, and everything else that happened behind that is old history. However, if he does come out and throws out a first pitch, and then the Cubs lose that game in the next 15 games.
Yeah, he's best to keep himself.
Then people start to go, uh-oh.
Put him in the dugout.
Yeah, you can't put him in the dugout. He has to be a player or a coach or a manager to sit in the dugout.
Or Steve Bartman.
Or a trainer.
Remember Ted, the owned the Braves.
Ted Turner.
Ted Turner wanted to sit in the dugout back,
yeah.
I think, in the
70s,
and they wouldn't let him do it.
But the weird thing is they had let his wife Jane Fonda at the time.
Right.
She's hot.
Because she wore a Barbarella. So
exactly.
They were okay with that.
Well, the stripes look better on her.
By far. By far. All right. What are your thoughts on this? Was the Cubs move just a goofy PR stunt, or did they do the right thing? And what are your feelings about him, about Steve Bartman? Is all forgiven? Give us a call or a text. We'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, 14 years ago, a bunch of people reached for a ball. Steve Bartman got blamed for it, and the Cubs organization presented him with a World Series ring that says his name on it.
Yeah, it's lovely.
And there is an anchor or radio or TV, I don't know.
Linda
who she
Cohen,
is.
She does ESPN television. She says the whole thing is ridiculous, that the Cubs are just, you know, playing this up as a PR move, that this isn't going to erase anything that's happened over the last 14 years. But I disagree. I think this was the perfect goodwill gesture between the Cubs and Steve Bartman.
Someone, and I want to point this out, why didn't they make the gesture of all is well years ago? It's easy now that they've won the series to do this act of forgiveness or all is well. What could they possibly have offered to him that meant as much in the last 14
years? I can't think of a thing.
His Frank Murtha, the guy who's been representing him, was on with John yesterday and said the Cubs have reached out to them through the years. So this wasn't their first approach to him.
But doesn't that tell you even more that this wasn't a PR move, Steve? That this
of course
was
it bothered them.
Yeah.
So tired of all the complaining about it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Matt wants to chime in on this. Hi, Matt. Thanks for calling us.
Hi, everyone. How are you?
Great.
Good, Matt. What do you think?
Well, okay. Here's my thing. 14. I was 16 when this happened. I blame Bartman. Looking back on it, we should have blamed Moises Alou, and he even said that he wouldn't have caught that ball, because if Moises Alou hadn't have reacted the way he did, none of this would have happened.
That's what I asked Bill, if it wouldn't, the fact that Moises Alou got so crazed about it.
He did, too.
He was acting like a jerk.
He went ballistic, and then he said, like, 3 hours later, I wonder who got the ball.
But you know what? I think in the heat of the moment, if you're a left fielder in that situation where everything's on the line, you win that series, you go to the World Series for the first time in a long, long time, I think maybe part of that was a show to say to the umpire, I would have easily caught that ball. The, you know, hoping that the umpire goes, yeah, you probably would have caught that ball, even if you, he knew you didn't stand a he didn't stand a chance.
So he pulled a Rodman, is what you said?
He pulled
overreacted
a little bit. Yeah,
he overreacted.
Yeah,
I don't think it was intentional.
He pulled a Nicolas Cage,
and maybe he thought he would catch the ball. You know, and that was his initial reaction. So what? I don't think he didn't set out to create this 14-year ordeal.
Well, of course he didn't.
He was just ticked at that 2 seconds later that he didn't catch the ball.
That's
Bill,
true.
I think you would have caught that ball more than Moises. I think you could have caught that ball.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really nice of you. Thank you. I like
have a good day again.
Thank you.
All right. I think Matt has your name written on his folder with hearts around it, but
maybe.
I'm not sure.
I wouldn't blame him.
Here's an interesting prospect. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Wendy, longtime listener. I love listening to you and your Bill and your show.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
My thing is they should invite Sammy Sosa back. I mean, he's a player. What's Bartman? I mean, he's nothing. He's a fan that I don't know if he screwed up, but
I don't think Sammy Sosa should be invited. Have you seen him lately?
Yeah.
He's looking really weird.
He looks like powder. Do you remember that movie Powder?
Remember Michael Jackson when he went bleached his skin or something?
Yeah, yeah.
But
like.
It's pink.
On internet.
But his waning days, if not months, with the Cubs were not pleasant.
No.
The Cubs were not happy with Sammy
and
Sosa.
And how did he go from the scrawny little stick figure on the south side over to the north side, and then he was humongo?
You noticed that, too.
He sold tickets for the Cubs, so he made money for the
that
Cubs.
That is true.
Now they should reciprocate back by saying, okay, Sammy, let's bury the hatchet, whether it's in each other's backs or in the ground. Let's bury the hatchet.
I wonder if that'll ever happen.
I don't know. Well, if it did with Bartman, why not Sammy?
I think the difference is that Sammy became quite a lot to deal with toward the end of his reign with the Cubs, whereas Bartman, again, was just sitting in the
room. An innocent guy.
Yeah.
I can't believe that. How many years ago? 13?
14 years ago.
Oh, my God. I feel like an old man now, and I'm only 55.
Don't worry.
Thank you, Greg. Right. I appreciate you listening. And finally, Lisa wants to weigh in on this. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Yeah, I do want to. I think that the Cubs organization are just so classy for doing this. I really.
What's the downside to this? There's no downside to this. They're just reaching out to a fan. It's a nice move.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Good.
And I'm glad that it's nice to know that they've been reaching out to them for the past few years.
Agreed.
That's good to know. Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Steve, I told Wendy this the other day. That year that this happened 14 years ago on Halloween, I counted not one, not two, but three kids coming to the door dressed as Steve Bartman
really?
For Halloween.
I wouldn't have given them candy. All right, Todd, you have the final word on this.
My head is spinning listening to some of these ideas.
Sitting in the dugout is not a good idea? Come on, he'd be protected.
No, let's do better than that. Let's make him play first base.
Wow.
And then the fans really have something to boo him about. Just put him at first. Could you see him with an oversized uniform and his Little League glove and his hat crooked? And, you know,
you're making
know.
My I, head I spin, think, Todd.
I know.
Todd,
I,
how about this? Moises Alou gets to play left field for one game, and he has to wear Steve Bartman and a baby Bjorn around his neck for that game.
You've got it, Bill. That's perfect.
Now we're talking.
I love listening to you guys. I learn something stupid every day.
That's
so
our goal. Thanks, Todd.
Thank you very much. That is a great idea. Baby Bjartman.
A baby Bjartman. Now we're talking. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news and then more show. Thanks for all your calls and texts. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Woo! Woo! That's what I do all the time. Dane Neal is in here. Or when I'm listening to him on his show on Saturdays on the road. Is it 2 to 4?
That's when you're going, woo!
2 to 4.
Two solid hours of Wendy making that woo noise because of you, Dane.
Yes, it's like the next generation of the Ronnie woo woo, except
no, please.
I mean, just with a singular woo, just woo.
I'll have to bring more roses next time.
Dane, that voice we just heard is the coolest named guest you have ever brought on the show.
Yeah, and that is saying something. We know we've brought some guests with really great names, some with made up really great names,
right.
But when your name is, well, let's just go into a little bit. Lollapalooza is coming up, right?
Mm-hmm. Speaking of names.
Mm-hmm. Right, there's a name, right? Like Larry Lollapalooza has been trying to get some royalties for that for many years. It is coming up, and it is the combination of food, fun, music. It brings in people not only from Chicago but from around the world who blindly buy the tickets oftentimes before they're really aware of exactly who's going to be performing.
Talk about blind faith, and they're never there.
Right, exactly right.
But really?
So, again, that is happening. Yeah, is Blind Faith ever going to be there?
I don't know. Steve Winwood's around.
Put in the suggestion box. I'm sure there's a big one out there. One thing that they have, too, is a lot of fun imbibing celebrations. And when it comes to cocktails, there are some signature cocktails that are happening at Lollapalooza that will only be happening then, made especially for it to kind of combine that kind of cocktail and music vibe. Hendrix Gin is one of our very favorites. It is when it comes to gin, it is unique and different and beloved. Revered. It's got its own kind of cool, crazy brand. And Mattias Horseman is with us. He is the brand ambassador.
I thought that was a band at Lollapalooza.
It probably is.
Maybe one day it should be.
He's the brand ambassador for Hendrix, and he is going to be out there. He's going to talk about some of the cocktails that will be there and certainly some of the ones from Hendrix that are going to be front and center at Lollapalooza.
Mattias, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you so much. Yeah, wonderful. Thanks.
Where are you from? That's an incredible, not just a great name, but a great accent as well. Where are you from?
Thank you very much. I'm originally from England, actually, the South Coast. But my mom's actually from Brooklyn, New York. So I have the best of both worlds.
Wow.
I didn't get the accent, but I definitely got how to drive. So.
Good.
I've kind of ignored gin recently, and perhaps I shouldn't be ignoring it. It's made from the juniper berry, correct?
Yeah, that's one of the main botanicals that's in gin. Sort of across the board, that's kind of like that evergreeny, piney flavor that you're going to kind of associate typically with gin. But Hendrix is actually from Scotland, and we are curiously infused with rose and cucumber.
Oh, boy.
So this year we're actually driving a giant cucumber slicing truck called the Hendrix Grand Garnisher, and it's going all around the country slicing cucumbers for cocktails.
I love cucumbers.
Yeah, and well, actually, it's funny you mention that because we have some in your cocktail today that I whipped up. So it's just at Lollapalooza you can find these cocktails. It's actually right here in the studio.
Maddie, so let's talk a little bit about the thought process. Hendrix is one of those brands that is out there. It is well known, and it is, you know, completely different than pretty much any other gin on the market. What was the thought process of the rosemary and cucumber? Were there other things that went on the cutting room floor? Bill, I'm sure you've got some I guess less good ingredients that may not have made it to the final cut. Thumbtacks, maybe.
You know, the truth is, I mean, it was a spark of imagination. You know, we're all a big family at William Grant & Sons, and so the guys who make all the whiskeys, you know, they sit around and, you know, to make something that truly exemplifies the British nature. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't ask for more than that. That's fantastic.
Right.
So we basically had this idea, and Leslie Gracie, our master distiller, we sort of came by and we said, you know, here's the idea. We want to create this British-style gin with rose and cucumber. And she said, I think I can make that happen. And so finally, after a lot of experimentation, she came back and she figured out how to do it. So it's fantastic. We have two different types of still that we use, and we combine those together to create this wonderful expression that we call Hendrix Gin.
What is this particular cocktail? Because this is amazing. And talk about refreshing on a hot day.
Someone dropped a leaf in mine accidentally.
Yeah, there you go. So this is basil. The Hendrix Cucumber Basil Smash. So we think it's absolutely a perfect cocktail for the summer. It's perfectly a good cocktail for the winter, to be honest. I think the real key ingredient is to be surrounded by good company, which luckily I am today.
Oh.
I think when it comes to cocktails, that is one of the biggest things. But in here we have fresh ingredients, and that is my number one tip to anybody making cocktails at home. Always use fresh. Fresh is best.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're going to be using fresh lemon juice and fresh basil leaves in here, we have a little bit of a tiny bit of simple syrup just to kind of create that balance. And that, again, is very simple to make. It's just equal parts sugar and water.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, our beloved Hendrix Gin with cucumber and rose infusion. So.
Can I just tell you, not anyone can make all these different flavors infused together in a fantastic drink. It does take an art, doesn't it?
You know, I think that's the beauty of having
having
the bartenders around the world right now, is because the artistry that is mixology and cocktail making is being more accessible at home now. which I think is fantastic. Because you can go to places like hendrixgin.com and you can look up all the in our treasury of tipples. And we actually give you very, very simple instructions on how to make these at home. And so you do sort of start to see more of that artistry coming into the home place.
Two things. First, Treasury of Tipples is my favorite Harry Potter novel. Second of all, you said that it's a great summer drink, but it's also a good winter drink. So most of the ingredients that I'm tasting here are more synonymous with summer. Cucumber is a cool flavor. Lemon is a cool flavor. How does it make the crossover transition into
a winter
drink?
So again, I think, you know, you're using that fantastic base spirit, okay? We have Hendrix with all its wonderful symphony of 11 botanicals with the accompaniment of cucumber and rose.
Yeah.
And from there, those flavors translate into the beautiful summer drink. So maybe instead of using a simple syrup, I make a chamomile simple syrup. Mm-hmm. And then we use that, and that could all of a sudden become a beautiful winter warming cocktail.
So more of a tea bend to it.
Yeah, so you can. Yeah. There's so many wonderful things. As long as you start with that wonderful quality-based spirit, that's what counts.
I'm at HendrixGin.com. What's the name of this drink again?
This is the cucumber basil smash.
All right. Back to you, Dane.
When you think about summer in Chicago, Lollapalooza is definitely it, and it is that unique combination of so many people, hundreds of thousands of people, music, spirits, and so this is happening. This, along with some other cocktails, are happening in the VIP. Talk about the mindset, kind of inspiration of collaborating with Lollapalooza and bringing some of these specific drinks to the fest.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, like I said before, William Grant as a whole is a big fan of these kind of festivals because it's bringing everybody together from all across the world.
Right.
And, you know, we have artists here from everywhere. Not only bartenders will be there, you know, but they're artists, like Wendy was saying, but also the bands that are playing. So we have bartenders to bands, all with incredible creativity. And Hendrix is there to sort of give people a little taste of the curious nature of the world and to sort of engage that creativity, but in the crowd side of things. And, you know, we'll be there. Hendrix will be there. We have Sailor Jerry is going to be making cocktails as well, both in the GA and the VIP. And we also have Florida Cana Rum is going to be there. So it's going to be a very, very fun day for people to go to these bars and sort of try all these wonderful cocktails.
May I ask you what is either the best or the dumbest question I've ever asked anybody?
So polite.
I don't know how this will play out.
I've worked behind a bar for many years, so we'll see where this lands.
So you know how a lot of places will try to match a drink with a type of food? Right.
Yeah.
Could you even try to match a drink with a type of music? Does that make sense?
100%.
Yeah.
You know, I think you're going back to before we became on air, we were talking about, you know, again, my name and the Electric Horseman.
Yeah.
And again, I think it's about that style of making drinks. So when you have a cocktail, you know, in a beautiful sort of dimly lit cigar room at night and, you know, the sort of whimsical nature of the music is just passing through the doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, you maybe want something a little more sultry, like a Martinez, which is, you know, a Hendrix, a little bit of vermouth, some bitters, like Luxardo Maraschino, very deep, spicy flavors.
Yeah.
But when you're outside in the summer sun and you need something to cool you down on those hot days, that's where we bring out this cucumber basil smash and other simple ingredients that you can, again, make at home.
And I'm on the website right now. The skill level is novice, so I will be making these on my own. I never realized how much I enjoyed gin.
You know, it's one of those, I think it's always about that conversation you need to have with that bartender. Let them make the cocktail. I always think, you know, people, I was just talking to somebody before and they said, oh, every time I think of gin, I think of my father and my grandfather. And I went, that sounds like good company to me. So, you know, I just re-explore it. It's life's about discovery. It happens outside your comfort zone.
You'll be in the company of hundreds of thousands of people. Part of the role of being a brand ambassador, not only is to come up with great cocktails and explain them and share them and inspire people, but on site you are, you mentioned it, a performer as well. And so for people that'll see you at Lollapalooza, Hendrix has kind of, for those people that may not be aware of it, sort of this kind of turn of the century kind of cool vibe, right?
You know, sort of a Victorian element.
Yeah, Victorian kind of. So what will you be wearing and what will you be doing and how will people be able to help?
Perfect. Well, most people, if you guys do come up to the bars, I will be wandering around all of the bars, making sure that everything is going smoothly, of course, with the cocktails and, of course, doing some quality control along the way. But I think you'll be able to see me. Actually, I'll be throwing shade in a very British way while I carry around my Hendrix umbrellas all day.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, you'll be able to see me floating around the crowds and sort of having some fun.
What will you wear? Will you be wearing period garb?
Oh,
you know, I think some sort of summer version of a modern period garb. So we're talking shorts, a little neckerchief, maybe.
And, the concert t-shirt.
Yeah, yeah, they, and of course a concert t-shirt underneath everything.
The umbrella is a nice touch because in England, for people who haven't been, it rains like every day.
Yes, I think I've got the umbrella walk down to it, down to a teacup, as you would say.
Matty, it's so nice meeting you.
Such a pleasure.
This drink in particular is outstanding, but if people want to know more, HendrixGin.com is the website.
HendrixGin.com. You can hashtag us at HendrixGin. And I am the bar poet on Instagram. So if
That's
people
you.
Feel like following me along, they can kind of see my adventures and see some of the best cocktails around wherever I travel. So
doing it now.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
To follow you back.
We'll take a quick break and then more discussion about food with Dane Neal. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, along with our friend Dane Neal, who comes by every other Wednesday, and we discuss food. And if you can't get enough of Dane, by all means, visit his show, On the Road with Dane Neal, on Saturdays. It's always a fun show to listen to.
2 to 4.
2 to 4.
We try to keep the fun levels high.
Yep.
We got a fun meter.
The fun meter? Yeah, it's nonstop. It's 120 minutes of nonstop fun. It's the most you can have by law.
There's a few stops in there, but yeah. We're obligated to take regulations and everything like that. Stop it.
Dane, you have brought another guest with a food that, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, pizza, you're calling this, Dane?
Yes, pizza. Well, pizza. We've talked about how, you know, Lollapalooza, Chicago, synonymous with summer here. People think of Chicago, what do they think of, Bill? Other than, you know, corruption, rampant crime now
sure.
and then. Of course, when they think of food, they think of pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the newest concepts here to Chicago that is doing some things in a very cool way is Pizzeria Bibu. We've got...
Say that again?
Pizzeria Bibu. Is that the correct pronunciation?
It is.
I love it.
Zach Smith is here. So it's a fun name. Pizza is fun. They're doing some cool things with the thin crust pizza with some great toppings. They brought a bunch of them, and we've got Zach Smith in studio with us.
Hi, Zach. How are you?
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Tell us the backstory on Pizzeria Bibu. Where did it come from?
What was it like Twiggy from Buck Rogers used to make that?
No, that was Beedy Beedy Beedy.
Oh, gotcha. All
Not
right.
Bibu Bibu.
Where'd the name come from, Zach?
Well, I have a couple of nephews, and they're really cute. And,
yeah.
You know, there's this book for children called A Hippo and His Bibo. But my nephew walked around saying, Bibu, 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 and he would touch his belly button. And
Can you get that on a pizza?
Belly button lint pizza is one of the toppings.
It's just about comforting people. You know, pizza is one of those things that you share with others. It's a thing for a special occasion or whether it's Monday night in your sweatpants. And,
yeah.
You know,
it's pretty versatile.
Tuesday night, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Even though he's a cute kid, when he turns around and wants a piece of the action because you're using his word.
No problem.
That won't be a problem. All right, good. That's good news. What makes your pizza a little different? This is Pizza City. This is Pizza Central.
There's no question about it. I'm a proud Chicago kid, and I love what we do here in Chicago, and I grew up eating Nick and Vito's on the South Side.
Love
and,
that.
You know, that cracker crushed is really what I love.
Yeah.
And outside of that, you know, Chicago is known for its deep dish, and we wanted to do something totally different. We wanted to do something that has never been seen before in Chicago, I don't think. And there's lots of different schools of pizza, whether it's Neapolitan
mm-hmm.
and, you know, New York style or New Haven. There's pizza from everywhere.
I'm seeing Detroit style pop up a lot. You seeing that too?
Yeah, absolutely. Jets is a local Michigan franchise, and they do a more focaccia style pizza. It's a lot doughier, thicker. Ours is, I would say, much more reminiscent of a New York pizza in the fact that we cut it in a triangle and it's thinner crust and you can fold it, but it does have a crunch and a chew in every bite.
Right.
And, you know, Neapolitan pizza has that sort of more wet center.
Yeah.
And Chicago people, we're blue-collar folks. We love our bread.
Yeah.
And, you know, having that bread, you know, that it starts with that and then we carry on with delicious market fresh toppings and things that we make in house.
It's some of the cool things that are some of those elements that you kind of know and love about the pizza that you know and love, but then also some of those neat, like the quick time, right? It's a few minutes. It's really quick in and out. And then on the ingredient side, you've got some of the, what you would call traditional ingredients, but then, like you said, you've taken your own kind of spin on things too.
Absolutely. You know, We always want to pay respect to the history of pizza and especially what it means to this town. You know, having big clumps of delicious sausage cooked from raw so that you get that great mouthfeel and that chew, but all the while making it a little bit of fresher. We add broccoli rabe to our pizza and a little bit of fresh ricotta on the top. And, you know, other things, pepperoni pizza, we have soppressata. It's like an adult pepperoni. It's a little bit spicier. It's got a little bit more zip. And then we drizzle a little bit of honey over the top.
Oh, that's
awesome. So you get that sweet and spicy thing.
Yeah.
And then outside of the normal repertoire, we play with exotic ingredients like single origin Parmesan or fresh market tomatoes.
Yeah.
Or at brunch time, we have a bagel pizza where we take everything bagel spice and we sprinkle it all around the crust and we make a bacon, egg, and cheese on a bagel pizza.
Oh, my God. That does sound good.
Yeah.
I'm a thin pizza crust girl. I like that a lot.
I think that you'll like our pizza.
Well, now, Zach, as a guy who has grown up in Chicago, obviously has an affinity for some of the classics when it comes to like a Nick Vito's and some of the pizza here. For me personally, on the pizza side, it depends on the day. You know, there's times where I'll love a Lou Malnati's.
That's
there's
totally
times where
true.
I'll love, you know, one of the Neapolitan style pizzas. So for you, you know, when you're trying to put this concept together, was it the kind of thing where, how did you choose between just one? Did you have one that you liked and you wanted to do your thing, or are you going to branch out and maybe do some other styles?
Well, I think that it all starts with a movie called Ratatouille, and I think you've all seen it.
Sure.
And when,
is that where it starts?
Yeah. No, 100%, because when the food critic has that bite of ratatouille and they animate the comfort that it provides him, that's what I was in search of. I was in search of a pizza that was going to comfort me on a daily basis. And, you know, thin crust sometimes does it. Deep dish sometimes does it. The focaccia style pizza sometimes does it. But really, I wanted to have the pizza that I want to eat every day. And I was lucky, because it's an absolute accident, that I ran into my partner, Jeff Lutzow. We bumped into each other, and we met each other by accident, and he's the genius behind all of this. And together, we make it happen.
See, do me a quick favor. Go back to the Ratatouille moment. Did you know at the time when you were watching that scene, did you understand that this would play a pivotal role in your life? You knew then?
Absolutely. Yeah? I've known that I wanted to be in the restaurant business since I was 5 years old. I fell in love with it then, and I have worked my entire life towards this moment. And I can't wait to do more.
Congratulations.
Thank
Your
you.
Dream came true.
So if this goes well, and there's no reason to believe this won't go well, you have one location now, but do you see down the line having a bunch of locations, or is this going to be the focus of just one?
I mean, anything's possible. Yeah. If we're lucky enough to make this one great, we'd love to talk about it in the future. Yeah. I don't see any reason why I wouldn't want to share pizza with everybody else. And we actually have a second project that's coming up early next year. That's a totally different idea, but
based
we'll
on
stick to pizza
Disney
today.
Movie?
Well, you know, that's
Finding
funny that
Nemo?
You say that, but that moment actually perfectly encapsulates, in my opinion, the privilege of being in the restaurant business.
Sure.
You can give that feeling to some stranger, and you can connect with them instantaneously. And language, there is no barrier. It's just about comfort. And it doesn't matter if it's mac and cheese from a Blue Box or white truffles or lobster. It can be the plainest, most ordinary thing, as long as it touches that button inside people, and that is the driver.
Beautiful.
Listen to this passion. I love it.
A lot about the inspiration, less about an animated mouse workforce. We know that. and you brought some of the pizzas with. So before we go, let the listeners know what you brought in, because you brought in quite a selection.
We brought in a couple of pizzas for you to try. From our regular menu, we brought in our funghi pizza, which is a white-based pizza with a variety of roasted mushrooms, a little bit of balsamic and fresh ricotta and chives.
Mm.
We also brought in our soppressata pizza, which is the adult pepperoni that I mentioned earlier. We brought in the sausage pizza because, again, this is Chicago, and we have to show you the sausage.
Like right. the sausage.
And then from our secret menu, we brought in a couple other things, which is the Hot Daisy, which is a vodka sauce pizza with Calabrian chilies and a little bit of fresh mozzarella and basil.
Kevin's going to jump on that one, I have a feeling.
To show off, you know, people forget that Chicago has beautiful produce, so we wanted to bring in something that showcased that, and that's our white tomato. It's a white-based pizza, and when it comes out of the oven, we just put a beautiful marinated tomato salad that's locally sourced all over it. And we also brought you some cannolis today. Pizzelle cookie, not fried. Really delicious.
Take the gun. Leave the cannoli.
That is correct.
Yep. Pizzeria Bibu, where are you located?
1521 North Fremont Street in Chicago. We're two blocks west of Halsted and 1.5 blocks south of North Avenue.
And the website where people can get on there, see everything that's going on, and come out and see you.
Is www.bibu.pizza. Yes.
Zach, great to meet you, and big time success to you. We hope that everything works out well. I'd love to see the passion that you have for food. That's fantastic.
Thank you very much for having me. Really,
excellent.
Thank you.
All right. And Dane, great to see you again. Thanks very much.
Great to be seeing you.
What's coming up on your next show, Saturday?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So we're going to talk a little Watkins Glen, some racing there. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the road trip things that we did along the way. I don't know if you heard last week. Mm-hmm. We had an opportunity to have a giraffe and elephant immersion as part of a road trip. And got a chance to spend some quality time with those amazing animals. And we've got a bunch of stuff coming up. Some really good stuff. A preview of Lollapalooza is a great road trip. And then race car drivers, you name it.
Perfect.
It's going to be great.
Thank you so much, Dane. Thank you so
much, Zach.
Good to see you. We'll take a quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Bob, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. A startling discovery just a few short days ago. They tested 111 NFL players' brains, and out of 111, 110 had visible signs of CTE. This is a problem. We join now Dr. Julian Bales on the telephone. We've had Dr. Bales on before. He's the chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery and co-director of North Shore University Health Systems Neurological Institute. Dr. Bales, thanks for coming back. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you.
This is the scariest news you could possibly imagine when it comes to the after effects of playing football. When you heard these numbers, what was the first thing that came to mind?
Well, it was a good study. It's published in a reputable medical journal. I think the science is good. It's interesting. I don't think it's a lot of new information. I think it's what we've known before, and that is that the ones who have symptoms and have had the exposure to, in this case, years of football playing at a very high level, and who had developed symptoms, they're very likely going to be positive. This drives it home that, you know, 99% plus are positive.
I have a couple of friends who unfortunately are divorced now, but a major portion of their fighting was their son wanted to play football, and the mom said, no way. And what do you say to people listening out there now? Because there are a lot of people who still, hey, a kid loves football, we're going to let him play. What can you say to them to help put their mind at ease a little bit?
Well, those are good questions, Wendy, that I get a lot as well. So, you know, these players they're talking about in this study were really part of what's now a bygone era. They played in the 50s and 60s, 70s, 80s, and maybe 90s. This discovery of brain injury in football has just happened in the last few years. And so the style of play, the style of practice, the excessive, egregious head-to-head hits, for the most part, are not occurring nearly like they did before, and practice contact has been cut way back. For instance, the NFL, after they break camp in August, only has 14 contact practices the entire season. But nonetheless, that's a very important question you ask, and so my answer to that directly is, look, we know more about concussions than we ever did. We know more about the exposure. We know about the symptoms. So parents and athletes and coaches need to be aware of those. If they believe that the risk-benefit ratio outweighs their concern and the player understands that and he's of a consenting age that he gets it, then I think it is safe to play football, and especially if they're not sustaining multiple symptomatic concussions, they can do that safely, especially in the high school, youth and high school years.
So, Dr. Bales, that said, as you just pointed out, a lot of these players played, you know, years ago, and there's more safety measures in place. But give me a realistic guess. Now, this study showed 99%. If you took players today and gave them this exact same study, what's a realistic number to expect percentage-wise would show signs?
Of the ones who play at what level getting CTE changes in their brain?
Yeah.
Well, I think the real risk doesn't accrue until you play professionally. There's been very few that have been discovered at the college level only, none at the youth level only, and just a handful have had CTE changes who have played high school only. So the real risk technically is if you've played for many, many years, it's an exposure paradigm. And so it means the more you've been exposed, it's like how many packs of cigarettes have you smoked and what's your chance of getting lung cancer. So the risk, we don't know. We don't have that data. We don't have the epidemiology, the surveillance, longitudinal studies. I think the risk if you play in high school is extremely small, less than 1%. And I think the risk if you play through college is maybe a little bit higher. We just don't know. We don't have that denominator of what the actual number is.
All right, we have a listener who has texted into us. My 21-year-old daughter has had 5 concussions, 3 of them pretty bad, where she couldn't drive for 8 months. Does that make her more vulnerable to CTE?
Well, I don't know what sport this is, or we don't know how severe the concussions were or how they were managed, or did they have one concussion on top of another. There's a lot of factors that go into answering that question. There hasn't really been a girl or female discovered with CTE yet, and most girls' sports don't have nearly the repetitive head impacts that football or ice hockey has had in the past anyway. So the answer is that the risk is very small. We don't know for certain what it is, but it's small.
So when they talk about other sports, this is almost exclusively football, but the other sport that keeps getting mentioned is soccer. So the parallel is what? Is a header? You're hitting the ball with your head?
Yes, so that's very, very common in soccer, as you know, and also they collide a lot. They collide with other players or sometimes with a goalpost, or they hit the ground. So soccer is probably the number one cause of concussion in girls' sports, women's sports. There has not been a soccer player, to my knowledge, diagnosed with CTE. They just don't get the thousands of head impacts that football players get. And football players wear a helmet that has given some a false sense of security, because even though the head has this external protection, the brain is floating inside the skull and is still able to move back and forth and undergo concussion.
My brother played high school football. He was a running back. He was pretty good. I remember, and this was quite a long time ago in the late 70s, mid-70s, he had this special helmet that my mom had to pay for. We had to pay extra for it, but it had this like gel in it. It was kind of unheard of back then, and it was supposed to protect the player. But now someone has texted, if the players went back to wearing, like, for instance, those leather helmets and helmets without the protection, would players play differently and maybe not have the false sense of security that these new helmets give them?
Well, people have suggested that. You know, has the modern helmet paradoxically and ironically led to more concussions? There is no concussion-proof helmet. And the problem is that, you know, people who are wearing helmets, they tend to, if they're this kind of player, to stick their head in there. And so the analogy I use is that, you know, when we were kids, and even, you know, girls may play very rough. You may slam somebody to the ground, but you would never run cranium to cranium against another human. You just wouldn't do it. No one would do it now. But the helmet has encouraged those who have the propensity to do it to stick their head in there, and the brain is still floating and sloshing around inside the skull despite the helmet.
And what about, like, I know some boxing greats have had some issues, but there's a mixed martial arts going on right now. Any chance this is bad for this type of injury as well?
Well, it hasn't really been described very much, but if you watch mixed martial arts, of course, it looks extremely brutal, and there are at times a lot of blows to the head. So I can't believe that it's going to be good for the brain. We haven't had a lot of scientific studies about their brains yet, because right now you've got to be dead before the brain can be removed and examined. Remember, CTE was first discovered in boxers in 1929.
Now, how did that come to be? What was going on in 1929 that they decided to test a boxer's brain?
Well, there was a medical examiner in New Jersey named Harrison Martland, and he noticed that a lot of boxers were becoming demented at a very early age. And when you're young like that, it's not Alzheimer's disease. So he started taking the brains out and doing autopsies, and he found a lot of changes in the brain, and this was called dementia pugilistica. We all grew up knowing it as punch drunkenness.
Sure.
And we, in society, accepted that about 25% of former professional boxers would get demented. It's just that no one really seemed to care that much, and it wasn't until our work with American football, which is a modern, beloved, and helmeted sport, in the first case of Mike Webster, the former Pittsburgh Steeler great, it wasn't until that modern era of football that we really got the attention that it deserved.
Our guest is Dr. Julian Bales, medical doctor, chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery and co-director of North Shore University Health Systems Neurological Institute. We'll pick this conversation up in just a few moments. If you want to jump in, we're easy to reach at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder with you on WGN.
We are talking to Dr. Julian Bales right now, chairman of the Department of Neurosurgery and co-director of North Shore University Health Systems Neurological Institute. Doctor, I really am kind of glad that I don't have athletes. I have one kid who is a musician, one who likes to play video games, because my brother played football. A lot of kids in the neighborhood play football, and it would be very hard for me to say, no, son, don't play football.
Okay. Well, I can understand that feeling, and I think a lot, and maybe more than ever before, of parents and family members share your feelings.
However, if you have a kid who wants to play, are there certain things that have changed because of these CTE studies that have come out? For instance, a head injury or a concussion or just a bad blow to the head, is it like a mandatory time where they have to miss the next game or something? Has anything changed because of all this?
Yeah, a lot has changed. So much has changed. So if you get a suspected concussion, not even a definite one, but if anyone suspects that you have one, you should be pulled out of that game or that practice and not return until you've been cleared by a licensed medical professional. And all 50 states now have laws that mandate that. So it's no longer the guesswork or is it cleared and now they can go back. If you have one, if there's any doubt, you're out for that day. The rules have changed. No more hitting defenseless players, blindsiding players, hitting head-to-head in the open field. Almost every level of play does not have much head contact in practice anymore. There's been more and more attention to adherence to these rules. So if parents have a son who plays or a girl that plays soccer, they want to know that the coach understands this, gets it, adheres to these rules, is very conservative with their child's brain, does not do excessive head contact at practice. If these things are followed, these sports are safer than ever. But remember, as I always advise parents also, that if they're not at football or soccer games or practice, what are they going to be doing? It is not, especially I know from personal experience, for boys, a risk-averse age when you're a teenager. So there's a couple hundred kids killed on bicycles every year. There's a few thousand killed in car accidents every year. So you have to weigh what is the alternative activities, not to mention video addiction, video game addiction, obesity, inactivity, and other things.
That's absolutely true.
Dr. Bales, I know in other sports, I was watching the Cubs game the other day. John Jay, the Cubs outfielder, got hit lightly in the head with a pitch. So they take a few minutes and they take him aside and they ask him a series of questions. Is that standard now in sports to throw some questions at the player to see if they're cognizant?
It is, and you know, concussion, part of the problem is it's an injury you can't see. There's no swelling, there's no bleeding, and so it's really just what you saw. It's questioning, analyzing the player, pulling them out, having a cool-down period until the coach or the athletic trainer, whoever's attending that person, is convinced there's not a question of concussion.
And I know that obviously big blows to the head are problematic, but now it's been brought forward that it's the repetitive hits, even smaller ones. Is that true?
Yeah, that's the so-called subconcussion blows. And so that means a blow to the head that does not rise to the level of a known or diagnosed concussion. So we think that those little hits that are repetitive may also accrue. They may add up. They may be injurious in the long run. And remember that players like Mike Webster, the first case of CTE and a football player, had played football 27 years. Junior Seau played 30 years. Neither of them had any diagnosed concussions in their career. So it's the exposure issue once again.
And this cannot be found in the brain until after the person has died, correct?
Correct.
Because there are people that say, oh, yeah, I've heard CTE. You know, there are students in high school. That's not possible if the person is still alive.
No, it's during the autopsy that they would determine that. Here's a strange question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, Dr. Bales. Do you think if O.J. Simpson was on trial today for the murders, could they have used CTE as a defense?
They certainly maybe would have tried. Yeah. I'm not. You'd have to ask an attorney if it has risen to a level of a legitimate excuse or explanation.
That's an interesting question.
The problem is very inconvenient when you can't diagnose a condition until someone's dead.
Right.
We have been working here at North Shore with UCLA on a PET scan, which is able to detect CTE changes in living people. That's in the early stages, and we're very optimistic about that potential. We've got to be able to diagnose it when people are alive if we're going to help them.
Right.
Got to protect that noggin, don't you? We have Barbara on the line. I think we have time for one question. Barbara, your question for Dr. Julian Bales.
Hi. Actually, it's not a question. I was explaining to your producer that...
You got to hang on. I accidentally hung up on him.
Dr. Bales, you did?
Yeah, I didn't. So we have to call. We have to call him back.
All right,
he's got to call us back.
Well, what's the question?
I didn't have a question for him, but I wanted to make a comment, though. You know, I mean, this is really sad, and because I have grandchildren that play football,
yeah.
And you know, the children that are going into it. So I understand what everybody's saying, but you know, when you think about it, there are so many professions that all of us have been through that have got some kind of a side effect. I was a hairdresser for 32 years,
mm-hmm.
and now I have COPD. I never smoked. I was a very light drinker,
mm-hmm.
but I have COPD now from, I guess, inhaling the aerosols. And, you know, we've got coal miners, and we've got, my husband was in the Navy, and he dealt with all the asbestoses, you know,
yeah.
that was in the air. And I'm not trying to minimize
CTE,
the head concussions and
right.
things, but there are just so many people that are suffering with, I mean, we've got people suffering from Agent Orange from Vietnam. We just lost a friend with Parkinson's. You know, there are just so many things in life that affect us physically
sure.
and affect our health that,
And Dr. Bales, that's what Barbara was saying, is there are other professions that have other risks. She just wanted to point that out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And heavy duty risks that, you know, it's going to take, the COPD is going to take my life, you know.
So there you have it, Dr. Bales. That's what her comment was. Sorry, I hung up on you.
No problem. I thought she didn't agree with what I said.
No, she does. It's just there are other professions and other risks associated with other things.
Yeah, of course. That's the assumption of risk. And many, many men and women have jobs that are dangerous, and many can die. So that's under the category of assumption of risk.
So, Dr. Bales, when you hear, and this has been an ongoing topic where people say at some point down the road, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a college or a high school football program, that's impossible. That's not going away anytime soon, is it?
I don't think so. I hope not. I believe there are many benefits to all these sports, especially football, and I'm still very supportive of the sport. It's our job to bring attention to these issues, just as your show is doing, and try to make people more educated and thoughtful about it. But once again, what are the alternative activities? Everything we do has pros and cons.
And as a listener, we're out of time, but a listener was holding on to say it's also much the responsibility relies on the coaches and the trainers as well. And Dr. Bales had a great point. If your kid's playing football out there, have an ongoing conversation with the coaches and the trainers and find out what they're doing to protect your kids. Some great advice from you, Dr. Julian Bales. A pleasure to talk to you.
Okay, I enjoy talking to you.
Take care, Dr. Bales. We'll take a quick break, then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.